Join the conversation.
You're with Kate Salk.
Very nice, after all those kinds of stories and all the bad environmental news we so often have to share, how nice to be able to talk about something positive today. It is the story of how a reforestation project is having positive spin-offs for a highly endangered South African bird and for local communities who are seeing job creation opportunities as a result. The bird I'm talking about is the Cape Parrot. It is the country's only endemic parrot, and there are fewer than 2,000 of them left in the wild today. It's hoped, though, that reintroducing some of their favourite trees for nesting in could encourage growth in this fragile population. The Cape Parrot is Poicephalus robustus, and I guess the big aim is to see a bit of robustness coming back into the population numbers. To tell us how they're doing it and the wonderful spin-offs that are happening from this project, I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Kirsten Wimberger, who is director of the Cape Parrot Project and a trustee of the Wild Bird Trust. Kirsten, lovely to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks for having us.
The parrots have got very good taste in trees. Unfortunately, it's been their downfall, though. They love to nest in old yellowwood trees, and sadly, old yellowwood trees are in pretty short supply these days, aren't they?
Yes. I mean, you know, back in the day, late 1800s, we were using those yellowwood trees for railway sleepers. Obviously, there's still a lot of tables out there that people can buy. And these are really, really slow-growing trees. And that is the problem that we're facing today is these large, beautiful giants are missing.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, it's not the only tree that they can nest in, but it is their preferred tree, Kirsten. And as you said, so many of them have simply been removed from the environment. I'd imagine that you are also facing challenges that all species are facing of human habitat encroachment and depleted groundwater and exotic plant invasions. Those probably also play a role in the decline in the parrot numbers.
Exactly. I mean, that's why we actually see the conservation of the Cape Parrot as a kind of a flagship for the conservation of forest habitats.
Right.
You know, we are using this beautiful, you know, loud species to basically bring attention to the state that these forests are in. And, you know, looking at the work that we are doing by restoring this land is obviously for the benefit of all animals.
Yeah.
Bringing in, you know, mice up to, you know, insects as well as birds. But interestingly, they're actually showing remarkable adaptation to exotics.
Oh, really?
And that is a good thing for us, even though we don't really know the extent that it has on their health. So one that they really prefer, that they really enjoy, is actually the pecanuts.
Okay.
And they flock in large numbers at a certain time of the year, always to the same pecan orchard to forage on them.
Okay, so the nuts are drawing them in. I mean, food availability obviously is always going to be a key factor in a species' survival and ability to thrive. I mean, Kirsten, let's talk a little bit about the parrots. You just used the term lovely loud birds. They are in, I understand, quite limited in their geographical stretch because of the reduction in the forest patches. Tell us, before we talk about the reforestation project itself, won't you just tell us a little bit more about this bird and why it's worth saving?
Well, I mean, you know, we can't always say we have to say something because they're beautiful. But for this example, it's actually a really good one because they are so amazing.
Yeah.
And they have this special golden head, which when seen with the green flashes through the forest, I mean, is really quite magical. And what's really quite cute is that you have the female with a bit of red above their beak, which is missing in the males. So you can actually, you know, easily see them out in the wild and actually go, oh, look, there's a male, there's a female. The juveniles are actually missing a bit of a red on the wings. And so, you know, my husband, who was the founder of the Cape Parrot Project back in 2009, he called it, you know, it should actually be a national sports team because of the same kind of colors. You've got the green, you've got the yellow, you know, a bit of red. It actually makes sense for them to be represented, you know, in the sports field.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are limited. There is some debate about whether they ever existed in the Titicaca and Knysna forest.
Okay.
But from what we're working on is that the Hogsback area where the main Cape Parrot Project base is, that is kind of the southernmost point. And then it extends upwards, obviously, throughout those forest patches into KZN. And then there's this weird disjunct population in Limpopo where we've just set up a new base to start monitoring the population then more intensively.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Cape Parrot Project. You just mentioned it was founded all the way back in 2009. What is the sort of the founding principle of the project? What is it hoped to do, Kirsten?
So this Cape Parrot Project is a project of the Wild Bird Trust. So for the Wild Bird Trust, they actually have a footprint as well as in South Africa, as well into Angola and Botswana. And their whole thing is looking at ensuring birds are kept safe in the wild by ensuring by securing critical habitat for the benefit of ecosystems, wildlife, and people in perpetuity. So that's the broad strokes of the trust. And then the Cape Parrot Project, our main aim is to conserve the species through research on the species, because you can't conserve something if you don't know about it, as well as the habitat that they use. And then we do conservation action, which is informed through our research, such as restoration, which we'll talk about later. And then community involvement is seen as integral to our success.
Okay, now the community involvement is the thing I love about this project, is the sort of the side benefit, Kirsten, because obviously it's a wonderful thing to be going out and recreating habitat. And obviously that's wonderful if that leads to the parrots being able to establish themselves more successfully. But the extra benefit of this project is that you are making the local community champions of those trees, champions of those birds, and also providing income opportunities. So tell us a little bit more about the tree nurseries and what's happening there.
Yes, so I mean, essentially conservation cannot be successful without community involvement and people actually working, you know, with conservation agencies towards a greater good. I mean, it goes back to kind of how you feel about the environment. And so we hope and we believe that the people that we engage with in these aspects, such as building community nurseries and all of that, that they actually see more than just the monetary benefit, that they actually see this connection. And they do. They report seeing parrots fly over and they tell us what they've been feeding. So around Hogsback, which is, you know, right on top of a mountain and within this forest belt, we've got these communities which are living nearby and obviously using the forest. And what we've done is actually built a communal nursery where community members come and they have their plots, and we show them how to collect seeds from the indigenous forest. We provide the seeds as well, which we've collected. Mm-hmm. And then we show them how to germinate it, how to make your own compost. You know, we even build the shed to store the tools using, you know, mud, and daub. We work with the communities to obviously, you know, we don't want them to just be reliant on this and just say, okay, you know, where's the next paycheck? They all get involved. You've got a nursery manager that ensures that everybody's working together to kind of grow up these babies. That's how they kind of see them, up to a certain height and a variety of species, but especially the yellowwood. And then we buy them back and we put them into the restoration areas, which we work with the government to identify. And then obviously we employ community members to help us do that. So it's working with people that are right there using the forest, and they all know each other. They're all working, you working on growing up the trees while I'm working on actually putting the trees back in. It's really a great feeling for all of us.
And it's so desperately needed in that part of the world. I drove through to Hogsback a couple of years back, just before COVID, on a family holiday. Hadn't been there since my young days as a youngster visiting the Hobbiton camp there, which I know you've also roped into this, Kirsten. We'll talk about that now.
Yes.
But I mean, I was driving on the approach to Hogsback, horrified at what I saw in the absolute dire poverty of some of the areas we were driving through. So it's so wonderful to hear how this kind of creation of jobs, even if it is for now on a small scale, is happening at a local level where it's most desperately needed and with this wonderful environmental benefit. I mentioned Hobbiton. I'm sure I'm not the only listener who has memories. Some will be fond, some will be not so fond, of doing the obstacle course and trekking through the night at Hobbiton as a youngster. You're also winding that educational facility sort of into your work, aren't you?
Exactly. I mean, you know, we can't do everything in one go. So, you know, we mainly are scientists and from a zoology background, you know, in the organization. And so we really wanted to reach out to people that are already doing this, that you know, they know their way around education. Because obviously, like I said, community is so important to success. And obviously, if you get at a grassroots level and you know, with children, if you speak to them there and help them out, you know, learning about the habitats, that is the key feature, as well as we actually even provide shoes as well, which was really heartbreaking, because one of the the kind of the feedback that one of the children gave was, you know, thank you for the shoes. I mean, that was like one of their things, and they didn't even want to wear it at the camp because it's like, you know, that's obviously, you know, wanting them to wear it actually to school. Yeah. And also being fed by Hobbiton. I mean, that's what they do. They feed you, they do everything there, they even do yoga. It's like a full-on experience, and you know, there that benefit to people's to children's you know, values and view on themselves, I think, is tremendous. So that we really partner with, like I said, in terms of the education side, you know, with partners like Hobbiton.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line is Dr. Kirsten Wimberger of the Cape Parrot Project, which is a project within the Wild Bird Trust, of which she is a trustee. Now, the one thing we haven't mentioned is the scale of this. Kirsten, I believe you've already replanted 5,000 trees into that first forest zone. What's the big picture? How big is the dream?
Well, yeah, first of all, with those 5,000 is from Fairtree, so they're one of our corporates that are actually we have sponsored us. And just to put it out there, we will engage with anyone that really wants to that is on the same heart as us. And Fairtree is one of those organizations that is working with us to try and make a difference. But actually, since 2009, we've planted nearly 50,000 trees. So the 5,000 is kind of dedicated to the Fairtree population, Fairtree a company. I mean, our sites are not small, and like I said, we've actually just started now in Limpopo. We are working actually with the University of KwaZulu-Natal to try and understand the priority forest patches throughout South Africa to understand where Cape Parrots are and where they should be and which areas should be restored, you know, which are actually needing some work and which should be actually given some protection, some status, some legal status. So that's how we're thinking. We're thinking, you know, all the way up and obviously working with universities, organizations in the different provinces to help us achieve looking at the national population of Cape Parrots and not just, you know, these little these populations and isolations.
Kirsten, I mean, well done to Fairtree, and thank you to Fairtree for their support of this project. That tells me that corporate support can be a game changer on something like this. How do you fund all of this work? Is it purely reliant on that kind of corporate support?
Yes, mainly. I mean, Green Pop's also a big one for us, ABAX. And we have luckily some benefactors from America that helps us. But, you know, I want to kind of put the plea out there. If anyone, especially corporates, I mean, we are definitely needing that kind of support. And what is amazing about the timing of all of this, I don't know if you know, but it's Bird of the Year is the Cape Parrot this year.
Yes.
So we are shouting loud and far all about Cape Parrot. And I think it's an amazing opportunity to, you know, we working with trees, which I know is very trendy for some people and out there in terms of funding. But we're really doing not just planting trees just for planting trees' sake. We're actually using it to conserve a species as well as the greater habitat.
Yeah.
And I think that hopefully corporates will hear that and see that that's such a nice partnership to work on for the benefit of the world. I mean, it's, you know, it shouldn't just be seen as kind of a, you know, green, well, what do they call it?
Greenwashing.
Greenwashing, exactly.
Yeah.
So we're an organization that will tell you exactly where we plant things and how it's benefited the species.
What's your hope in terms of the species numbers, Kirsten? I mentioned at the start that the population is down to roughly, less than 2,000 in the wild. What are you hoping to get to on what sort of timeline?
Well, what's actually interesting is that recently in 2019, various stakeholders, obviously including ourselves, came together and formed and actually developed the Cape Parrot and Misbelt Forest Action Plan. And that was basically a statement of what we should do for the next 10 years. And one of the aims of all, was that to ensure that the population actually rose to 2,500.
Okay.
And that we wouldn't see any degradation or any loss of forest habitat within the next 10 years. So those are kind of our immediate goals for the next 10 years, is to try and aim towards that.
And how confident are you that you'll reach that level?
You know, I'm a realist, so I'm very cautious. But I think that we are in a very good position. to see those numbers growing. And especially with, we really need the public's help. I mean, even one thing, just to give an example, is the big birding day that happens each year with the University of KwaZulu-Natal. They need volunteers because our estimates come from volunteers standing at various points, you know, making sure that we count all the parrots. So it would be amazing to know where all these parrots are. You know, we're looking at putting in acoustic monitors in these very isolated forest patches to actually know where they are. So, yeah. You know, we need the support of people to even bring us, you know, injured parrots. Maybe they have those, you know, any of that kind of thing. Tell people about parrots. Tell people about conserving forests. Do not remove things from forests. I mean, there's so much that people can do. And I feel that now is a great spot to actually kind of go with the whole bird of the year.
Yeah, focus
for people
on
to,
it.
Yeah, and let's go aim for that 2,500.
So speaking of individuals getting involved, Kirsten, Chris in Hout Bay has just messaged to say, we have a huge yellowwood tree in our garden. How could we attract this parrot? Hout Bay is pretty far out of the population area you've just described in the Eastern
yes.
Cape KZN. Is
exactly.
it at all possible you find this bird in our part of the world?
No, unfortunately not. So that's, like I said, there's some debate within the Cape Parrot community that it actually used to occur down here because it's called the Cape Parrot.
Yeah.
And people wanting to bring it into the Tsitsikamme forest. But there's no way that we could get them naturally here. It would be, you know, an actual bringing them and a reintroduction. And we rather want to focus on where they are right now, you know, focus and protect where they are now before we kind of move things around and there's diseases and, you know, how they're going to cope and all of that.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. So in terms of someone living in Hout Bay, I hope that they join us on Cape Parrot Project on Facebook page. Talk to us there, learn about the yellowwoods, learn about Cape Parrots, see how you can get involved in other aspects. Maybe come up for a big birding day and see where you can help out and, you know, see the country at the same time.
Sounds like a good plan. Dr. Kirsten Wimberger, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon and best wishes to you and the team in 2023. The bird of the year for this year is, in fact, the Cape Parrot. So do keep that good news in mind if you're heading to that part of the world. And if you are, again, I say this so often, but if you are in charge of budgets or know people who are in charge of budgets that can be allocated to worthy causes, please do drop a word in their ear about this wonderful thing that is happening. It benefits the forest growth and all the animals that rely on that. It benefits the Cape Parrot, one of our most endangered birds, and it benefits the local communities living around those forest areas. It's a win-win all round.